bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there, and way out of here. Second deck walk off home run, grand slam.
What is going on, everybody? Mike Curlin here. Welcome into Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Joined by my favorite person in this whole wide world, George. You can follow him on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. No Zach means it's going to be a good show. I'm joking. This is episode, 166? But the second episode of 166, we actually recorded one last week, realized it wasn't, I'm not going to lie, I didn't think it was that great, and then I didn't get a chance to edit it, and by the time I did, it felt like it was like, meh, so we just scrapped it. So we're back. The same
166 part two,
yeah, but a whole different topic, so it's even better. We're gonna continue with our positional stuff. We're gonna talk about second base. We're gonna look at the ADP since January 1st, at second base and in draft champions formats, because that has the most drafts. I was looking at OCs, which are 12 teamers, but there's only been like five drafts, so we're not gonna look at that ADP yet. So we're gonna focus on the top 30. We're gonna look at our ranks, we're gonna look at the ADP compare, contrast, me and you will talk about player debates, some of the more polarizing players of the position. We're not going to touch on every single name. That doesn't feel necessary, but we are going to talk about some of the more popular buzzworthy names. And then again, some of the guys in those mid to later rankings that we disagree on, maybe even against ADP, because I know we are higher and lower on players. Blah, blah, blah. I'm rambling. But anyways, George, what's up, man?
What's up, man? Yeah. Yeah, last week I was back from vacation, recorded, and yeah, it was just like kind of like whatever. We talked about our Battle of the Pods team, which, I mean, dude, that draft was just insane.
I talked about it today and told everybody on John L's pod that we absolutely hated our team. And then we started reviewing it. I'm like, well, we didn't hate the early rounds. I think it got to a point because we got screwed on first base, and then our depth, I blamed it on Drunk George on like three of our picks, because it got to a point where you realize our starting pitching depth is bad. We have so many relief pitchers on our bench. It's like we drafted really well for the first half of that draft, and the second half it kind of just like fell apart. But a lot of it was the craziness of like ADP went out the window. We didn't get any of our guys to fall to us, and it was just.
I think first base in particular like was cleared out by like pick 250. We kept thinking like, all right, you know, next turn we'll grab Brandon Belt, or next turn we'll grab Miguel Sano ahead of ADP as it is, and they all got pushed up just like super high. So we ended up with like Spencer Torkelson and Yoshi Susugo.
Don't forget Jerickson Profar, baby.
Jerickson Profar with first base. I mean, that draft was just insane.
All right, well, we can move on from that. Oh, God, yeah. It was so bad. I'm just hoping not to finish. You know what? Goal, finish in the top half. 15-teamer, by the way. All right, so before we get started tonight, I'm thinking housewarming. Wrong thing. It's whatever the thing is called where you're supposed to plug some stuff. We're going to plug some stuff.
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping. Close. Housewarming. Yeah, sounds way better. All right, housekeeping. Thank you. You knew what I was going for. Housekeeping. Let's see. Ratings and reviews, greatly appreciated. Spotify has it now, so you log in, you listen to an episode, and it lets you rate us. 5 stars is greatly appreciated. If you have anything to say to us or anything at all, please let us know. We'll gladly we actually read the comments and try to build off of those. And skplaybook.com, we are still rolling, got some different content. We got a closure chart we're working on. It's actually available on the site right now. The names are in. We're fixing to put in the rest of the information. Or most of the names are in, I think. I was scrolling through it myself. George is mostly handling that. Of course, we have the spring training chart. And that assuming we have spring training, that'll be up and running as well this year. But we have a Discord server for as little as $2.99 a month, $2.99 a month. That's a cup of coffee. You can join us in our Discord, talk shop, and we help, you know, with trades, live. We just do live AMAs. We're going to be doing a lot of that stuff as we pick things up and get going. So check us out there. There's an annual one. An annual option as well for a little bit of a discount. But like I said, at the very least, it's $2.99 a month. I think that's everything for that. I'm going to call it housewarming, even though it's housekeeping. Because it's like, it makes you happy. Housewarming. Like, everyone's welcome. Housewarming. Discord. Housewarming. Yeah.
I guess housewarming does sound better than housekeeping.
It sounds more. Yeah, because housekeeping is like work.
Yeah.
Like, housewarming is like, hey, welcome.
Yeah. Congratulations on your house.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we're building. Our Discord is our home. We're building our home. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. New website. See? Yeah, that's right. Housewarming.
Me and you are not good at selling, but we try. All right, let's get to what everyone wants to listen to, and that's actually this information. If you made it this far, thank you for sticking around. First off the board, again, this is according to NFBC ADP Draft Champions formats. Second baseman, Trey Turner. We have no argument there. I think you know what to expect. Nothing really to talk about there. Ozzy Albies at two. We both agree. Whit Merrifield at three and Marcus Semien in the top four. And we actually have it ranked the same way. I wanted to discuss Ozzy Albies for a second because although I drafted him second, I'm kind of concerned. He had a change in approach. So like the BABIP this year, I'm actually going to pull that up. I meant to pull that up. Look at me, super unprepared. I'm pretty sure the BABIP this year was low, but there's a reason. People might think, oh, he got unlucky. Yeah, it was really low. 278. He's posted 300 BABIPs each of the last two seasons. And the reason why I bring up the 278 BABIP for Ozzy Albies is because he hit a career low 259 in the process as well. However, he did hit a career high in home runs and still career high in bases, 30 and 20. It took him all of 668 play appearances, so Ozzy Albies is a bit of a compiler, which we already knew. But he did alter his approach. And the Braves as a whole kind of, I think, pushed this. It's just a guess. I haven't read anything. But I did notice, like, I think Swanson had a similar approach change that was also career high pull rate, career high. It was pull and fly ball rate, sorry. And then Eddie Rosario came over in the trade and upped his pull rate and his fly ball rate in the second half. So there was a true narrative there to, like, possibly see, hey, Braves are doing this with their players. And Albies concerns me because now if he's not giving you that batting average, if it is closer to 260, that takes away some of the allure of him being a five-category guy. But, again, 30 home runs, 20 stolen bases, and 200 earns in RBI, for a guy who has shown to stay healthy consistently, and he is only, what, 25? So I'm not overly concerned, but I just wanted to bring that up that, hey, the batting average might not be what you expect because of the change in approach if he sustains that change into 2021. So do you have similar thoughts on Ozzy Albies?
Yeah, I mean, while I can't really argue that he should or shouldn't be, like, I can't really argue his spot on the draft board as far as being the second baseman off the board. I mean, I haven't found myself taking him at where he's going right now. And I think, you know, part of that is that approach that you mentioned, career high fly ball rate. But it's also those struggles against righties and the on-base percentage. You know, he doesn't walk a whole lot. And, man, he's not very good against right-handed pitching. I mean, he hit 237, 295, 454 against righties for a 94 WRC plus last year. I think for me, he might be as far as, like, batting average, like, he might have the riskiest batting average of any hitter, like, in the first two rounds. And so, I mean, maybe that scares me off just a little bit. I would feel more comfortable if he was falling, like, closer to the back end of the second, where I could take, like, you know, if you can have, like, a Juan Soto and Ozzy Albies, you know. But, like, taking a guy who can realistically just repeat, you know, a 259 batting average in the second round, I mean, I understand that he's probably good for at least 25 homers and maybe, you know, I can see the steals taking a bit of a dip, but I think he's pretty safe for at least another 15 to 18 steals, which is valuable, yeah. But I think it's just that little bit of a batting average risk. If he continues with his profile and his struggles against righties, I think that maybe we're kind of hoping for that return to, like, that 295 or 280 batting average that he has shown before. I'm just not sure with his current profile that it's going to get.
I was just curious because Albies led off for a period of time last year because of the injury to Acuña, and he actually flourished in the three spot, batting 296, had 14 of his 20 stolen bases there. So I was thinking maybe the stolen bases, the addition of them, was because he led off, because you know how Acuña, he has those weird splits where Acuña runs and when he leads off, but doesn't do much when he's not leading off. However, Albies didn't stop running while batting third. And while batting third, he had a 122 WRC plus and a 860 OPS. I'm assuming that had a lot to do with probably hitting with players on. So Albies batting third is probably ideal, but again, it didn't hinder his production or his stolen base production. So my theory went out the window as soon as I looked this up. Cause I just looked, I was like, oh, Albies led off for like 20 or so games, and then I'm just excited to have a quick look at the lineups because I have all the hotkey buttons. I have issues, and I have a stream deck where I purposely logged every single lineup into a certain section of it. So just at the flip of a button, I literally pull up any team's lineup. It's a weird thing I do. Whatever. Don't judge me. My lineups are my thing, man. Which, by the way, quick plug, premium members, anybody who likes my spring training chart, I'm bringing one to the in season, where it's going to have the daily lineups, which, again, I know there's other lineup tools out there, but the difference is all the daily notes are also coming with it. So players running hot, players running cold, numbers, all that stuff's going to be included into the notes section. So, and that's going to be premium. That's going to be only for the chat members, the Discord members, or anybody who is part of the premium membership. So just thought I'd let you know, in case you do already follow the spring training stuff, we're doing one in season as well, but for the Discord community only. Back to this, though. So Whit Merrifield, I don't think we have any issues there. Semien, real quick, I'll touch on the fact that I'm not concerned with Semien's power production. I looked at his spray chart compared to all of the AL West spray parks, and his approach is so pull heavy and fly ball oriented that the power is going to sustain because of his approach, assuming that Semien sustains that approach. So I'm not too concerned about the power. Maybe loses like 3 or 4, but I could see Semien running just as much, if not more, because the Rangers are one of the top running teams over the last few years. And that team's going to have to still put up runs and manufacture runs. So I think the Rangers are going to allow Semien to run. And he was really efficient last year too. So Semien should continue the power production, should run just as much. I don't see why people are so, I guess the counting stats are worth being a little concerned about, but you could build around that. You should still get that power speed production out of Semien, plus a top two lineup spot more than likely. So I'm not really concerned. Do you have any concerns with Semien this year?
Not really. And I think we have started to see him, fall a little bit to probably a more appropriate range, but I definitely think, like, you know, he's pretty safe for 30 homers given his profile, and he's always among the leaders in plate appearances, so you know he's gonna accumulate stats. I mean, yeah, hitting top two in that lineup. So yeah, I think I probably wouldn't take him in the third, but if he fell into the fourth or maybe back into the third, I could see it. But I'm not too overly concerned.
I think that's where last few drafts I've been in, he's been falling to that like back third, early fourth, and I love that price, especially if you start hitter pitcher. I think he's a good, I think he's one of those last solid sources of like power speed that you get before that sure thing of a skill set falls off. That's Marcus Semien we're talking about. So Marcus Semien, fourth overall second baseman, and that dual position eligibility helps, which a lot of these guys, I didn't realize how many second basemen have dual position eligibility, but majority of them, almost like I'd say more than almost three quarters of them in the top 30 have a second position they're eligible at. So second base seems deep. But like even in a draft recently, I took Whit Merrifield. He ended up being my outfielder because I fell back on another second baseman. It's just the way it's working out this year that second base is a position littered with multi-position eligible guys. And it's just, like I didn't realize. I realized it, but it didn't click until I looked at it right now. I'm like, holy crap. Hobby Baez at 5. I understand the concerns. There's going to be a little bit of downside with the power going to the new park for Hobby Baez. But I feel like he is who he is. I know New Park is, but last year when he got traded to the Mets, he actually picked up the production and did a lot better. I don't think Detroit's done signing pieces around Baez. So I'm not so scared about, this is the first year I'm not fading Baez because I've been burned by it because I'm always wrong because he always produces in spite of the underlying metrics, like the plate discipline specifically. Am I wrong to finally be saying I'm in on Baez? Like, I've had a few shares already. Is this the year that I pick the year where he signs the mega contract and goes to the new park? The worst year to do it, but
right.
should we be fading him? Like,
I'm kind of with you where it's like, okay, this guy's done it long enough now where I could finally be like, okay, this is just who he is. He's just going to come with this kind of risk, this kind of volatility. But at the end of the year, you're going to get what he gives you. And I mean, at this year, at age 29, I mean, it's a profile that you know, we kind of know it's going to fall off a cliff at some point. Does that happen this year, the year we're finally in? And he's like, yeah, and like the worst park for him to go to, and
but easier division, right? Like the pitching in theory should be an upgrade for him to hit against, and I'm saying in theory, I know, but not the best ballparks because you have Detroit, you have Kauffman Stadium. Yeah, I'm not sure about the White Sox. I know the Indians are kind of like, Guardians, excuse me. The Guardians have, it's a weird transition. The Guardians and the Twins, I think those are more neutral. I'm not sure. I think if you pull it in Cleveland, it's beneficial to hitters. Regardless, though, it's Baez is just, I get it. Like, this was not the year. Maybe I need to move him down a little bit, but you're not much. By the way, these are still our ranks. Like, we're pretty much in with consensus for now. It's our next guy that we're both higher on the consensus because Javi Baez, like, again, the top five we just mentioned, Trey Turner, Albies, Witt, Semien, and Baez are both in our top six. You have this next guy in your top five. I have him sixth. His ADP is ninth. Brandon Lau. We're going to jump to him real quick. And why are you so high on Brandon Lau?
Oh, yeah. I love Brandon Lau. I mean, so we know he got off to a, you know, pretty bad start. But, dude, like, second half, he was one of the best hitters in baseball. He hit 291, 368, 591, 18 home runs. And everything that have been so concerned about when it comes to Brandon Lau as far as versus lefties and the strikeouts. I mean, he cut the strikeout rate down to 21.1% in the second half with a 10.4% walk rate. And he hit 296/296, 337, 531 against lefties. And if you look back at 2020, 60 plate appearances against lefties, he hit 300 with six homers. I mean, I think he's, I'm not so sure he's at such a risk to be platooned. And didn't he actually lead the Rays in plate appearances last year?
I believe he did. I know he led them in runs. I think I looked up the stat today. He think he had like 100 runs or just under. He led them in runs, though. It was a weird. I believe.
Yeah, I think he also led them in plate appearances.
It would surprise me. But the Rays are weird. They platoon everybody. But then, like, Lau, they give him run when he improves versus lefties, which he did improve versus lefties on the stretch. He actually hit him very well. Did you see my article I happened to drop just today about him? Like,
no.
All these, so I did this new splits article. Like, I have all these splits written down. I have, like, legitimately, what, maybe 30 or so players with their splits written on a piece of paper. And I find splits fascinating, and his were the WRC plus in the first half, 116 to 162, which somehow posting a 116 WRC plus with a 32% strikeout rate, hitting 208, impressive because he had the power and speed and other production. You mentioned the strikeout rate cut down. The OPS was almost 150, was about more than 150 points higher in the second half. But here's the left-handed splits for Josh Lowe. Whoa. He's not even in the majors. Brandon Lau. On the year, he hit 198, 261, 401. But then, like, in the second half, he hit 296, 337, 531 with a 140 WRC plus against left-handed pitching. So he really picked it up against lefties in the second half. He did that weird thing like that in the 2020 season as well. So Brandon Lau is a guy that, like, seems to be runs kind of hot and cold against lefties. But the overall approach change in the second half, too. More line drives, less ground balls, increased his average launch angle. He cut down on his swinging strike rate and improved his contact rate across the board, including a quick math here says 5.1% increase in overall contact in the second half, including improving his BABIP luck turned into like his typical league average, his typical career average BABIP. There was a lot of changes for Brandon Lau in the second half. And I know you mentioned some of the stuff, so I'm just reiterating it that Brandon Lau really showed that improvement in growth, and it was more close to that 2020 production that we were all buying into. So I think there is a level of production for Brandon Lau that we haven't seen yet, but I think that it's hard to bank on that. However, I think there's a floor, even if it's a little volatile, I think there's a floor there that Brandon Lau offers that many don't, and it comes with some speed. So that's why I'm also with you on being higher than consensus on them. And I probably need to bump them up above Javi Baez. I've been considering it. And now after being scared of Baez and just talking up Lau, it makes it a little easier to make that move. But
yeah. And I mean, in the second half, I mean, he did trade off, hit for more contact. The barrel rate was down to 11.6%, 44% hard hit rate, but that's still a very good barrel rate. Yeah. And if you trade that, if that's the trade off for hitting for more contact, I mean, yeah, you're looking at upside here. You know, he's hit 269 before. He's hit 270 before. Add 40 homers to that 269. I mean, that's
nice.
That's like a you know, we've seen like Bryce Harper hit that, right? Like, if you imagine like a Bryce Harper at second base here, upside here for with Brandon Lau. I mean, yeah, I love targeting Brandon Lau. And just like in second baseman in general, and maybe after we get through a few names, we can go through like our approach at least, like when it comes to second base. But this is range here is typically where I'm targeting my second baseman. So I found myself with a lot of Lau so far.
See, I don't have any, and I was actually aiming for him in this last draft I'm in right now, and he got taken. Like, someone jumped his ADP a little bit, not a lot. I think someone, or maybe he just didn't follow me where I was hoping he would, and it kind of sucked. I remember I ended up jumping India's ADP a little bit because I wanted a little more speed. So yeah, but I tend to see, I don't mind getting Semien if I haven't landed on him. I actually landed on Whit Merrifield in a draft because he fell to that early third, and it fit my team build. But yes, this is our tier three for us. And yeah, I like to get one of my second basemen usually here as well, because I think there's a little bit of power, a little bit of speed in almost all their bats, with upside for all of them to be a tier two type of guy without the price tag of it. The only one I would say doesn't have that upside, there's two of them. I'd say Jorge Polanco, I think last year was the upside of, and you could argue he could do it again, but I have a hard time banking on it, mostly because of health, not because of skill. He's always shown to have the hit tool and the skill set to kind of produce. But Polanco's health is always a question with the ankles. I think both ankles are actually bad. And India, I think he's more of the high floor type than he is the ceiling type. Those are only two. Maybe, did you notice Altuve's change in approach? He also has now been pulling the ball more than ever and hit more fly balls than ever. So he's another guy. Altuve is a similar guy that he's giving up a little bit of that batting average. Like the batting average used to be what, like a 280, 290 floor. Now we're like at 270. I think he hit 270 something last year, and he had like the home runs and all that. It's gonna be the same because he has the hit tool to do it. He's selling out a little bit for power, and the batting average isn't something you don't draft Jose Altuve anymore expecting 20 stolen
For
bases. And
still, yeah.
now, so if you're losing stolen bases for Altuve and a little bit of batting average, it's like he's still a four category guy, but that batting average can very well take a little bit more of a dip if he continues such a heavy pull heavy approach, and maybe the league adjusts and shift him. And I don't know, he's such a good hitter though, it's hard to really bet against him. But the batting average dip was there was a reason behind it. It wasn't bad luck for all two. How much I
Yeah,
want to
and
mention.
even if he hits, you know, 275, I think it's still a solid
Oh, that's
all
great if he
around profile
does.
here. Yeah, I mean,
It's just a matter
you're
of
still
like
looking at, you
what.
know,
Go ahead,
good
sorry.
counting stats.
Yeah, that was just something I noticed was Altuve. Like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. At 31 years old, he's learning new tricks, and he's about to be, he's gonna be 32 in the middle of the season. He hit a career, no, he tied his career high with 31, but that was the last time he hit 31 home runs. Altuve, that was 2019 with the juice ball. So this is like the first time he earned 31 home runs. He hit 278 with a 280 BABIP, and he's a 329 BABIP guy. And that's why when people look at BABIP, they think, oh, well, that should return, you know, that should be fixed, but it won't. What saves him again is the great contact skills, the great plate discipline. I don't really have any distrust in Altuve, who he actually hit 278 last year. I don't have any distrust in him at all. It's just a matter of temper your expectations on the batting average. And stolen bases, obviously, he stole five last year, so he's probably more of that type of guy than he is upside for 10 is still there, but I wouldn't bank on it by any means. A guy that we both have way lower, he's going as the eighth. Oh, we should probably talk about him. We actually have two guys low, and they're both going in the same range. Jazz Chisholm, polarizing player. We need to talk about him for a little bit. And Tommy Edman going sixth and eighth overall. We have Jazz. We both have you have him eighth. I have Jazz 10th. So I'm the low guy on him. And we both have Edman at 12. I'll let you speak on Edman here shortly. I just want to touch on Jazz real quick. I'm going to keep it simple, Jazz. I want to keep it very simple. I love the talent. I love the potential. And everybody wants to cite the whole, like, he started off great, got injured, and it was never the same. But a lot of the people don't realize with Jazz that Chisholm was he was so good against fastballs. Teams noticed that. They stopped throwing him fastballs. And he never posted an OPS over like seven something in any month after. It wasn't like there was, it's just frustrating that it's just there's so much swing and miss. He was exploited. I do think Chisholm is such a good player. Like, he's a very, very hardworking player. I do think he's been making strides to be better. However, I have so many concerns with that swing and miss. And Chisholm wasn't even leading off to finish the year. Is there a chance he doesn't bat at the top of the order? I do believe the power speed is there, but I also believe that there's a chance you're only getting two categories out of them. I understand power, speed, carry values in a lot of these, especially NFBC, where you need power and speed. But what if he bets, if he doesn't take that step forward that everyone's hoping he does, then Chisholm has a volatile, he's such a volatile profile that he could just be a power speed guy and leave you with just power and speed. And I don't like taking such a chance at that point in the draft. That's a personal opinion. I'm rooting for him. I could be wrong. I'll be happy to be wrong, but I am purposely building to where I don't need to take on the chance of drafting Chaz Chisholm this year. I do understand the ceiling, but I do think people need to understand that there's a legitimate floor here where he can be more hurt, more harmful than helpful. Rant over.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. If you're drafting Jazz, I mean, you obviously are, like, you should know that you need to kind of draft the batting average to carry him, because, you know, it is a very risky profile for sure. But I mean, I'm more in on Jazz. I mean, and really this whole tier here with Lau, Baez, Altuve, Chisholm, it's kind of goes back to like more of like team need, where like if I took batting average early, if I took Tim Anderson, like if I started with like Soto and Anderson, for example, or something, and I want to add 20 to 25 steals with Jazz in the sixth round, I mean, you know, then I'm perfectly fine doing that. It's one of those team need kind of things. But no, I do believe in Jazz quite a bit. I mean, the power speed combo, I know the batting average is a bit of a risk, but I don't know. I mean, it's just, he's such a fun dude. He's one of those things that's like, intangibles can't be measured, right? Like, you can't measure the intangibles, but he just seems like a guy that's just like,
he has that
mentality. It's gonna be hard to bet against him.
Yes, and he has the mentality to be a leader in the clubhouse. That's why, and James Anderson and I wish we could have pressed play, because he joined in on one of these late night Zoom calls or whatever that I was doing with Fish the other night, and we had a great discussion on this, and he talked me into believing into him more, like fading him. I feel a lot more dangerous fading him. I'm just at this point, I feel I'm not being stubborn. I believe in my side of the argument that I gotta see it first, and I'm okay missing out if he puts it all together. I'm building my teams to where if he breaks out fully, then I won't be so mad I missed out, because in fantasy, unless it's Acuna, like that was going in the year that he was like the 10th round pick that he was, that's the type of breakout these days that you can't miss on. But Jazz is going early enough. His ADP over since January is like 72.8, so about 73rd overall. You should be building a team that if he goes off, you shouldn't lose because of it. It would help you win, obviously, but you shouldn't lose because you didn't draft him. You know what I mean? Like, you should be able to build a team well enough without needing him. Is kind of what I'm getting at. So assuming I build my teams appropriately, like I think I am, missing out on Jazz won't kill me, but it's going to suck. I don't like being wrong. We talked about Javi Baez and his volatility, and Jazz has the same level of volatility, but there's this perceived upside because it's a young, flashy prospect. But I love Jazz. I love the idea, the talent, the real-life Jazz Chisholm. Like, he's so good for baseball. He wants to be Acuna. He wants to compete against them. I love that competitive nature. You mentioned the intangibles are not measurable, but the play discipline is. And the play discipline is so scary, and there's such a floor there. It's literally like a Keston Hira play discipline. The difference is I don't think Jazz is going to go that route. I'm just letting you know, like, you can compare the two's play discipline, the year that before last year, Hira entering 2021 and Jazz entering 2022, play disciplines are actually similar, surprisingly. And that's what concerns me, because we've seen it. But again, I think Jazz is a different breed than Hira was. Another rant. And I held on tight to this one, but it scares me. And I understand. I play scared sometimes. Caveat.
He's going to be one of the more interesting players to watch all season.
That's and as a Marlins fan, I'm blacked out, so it's fantastic. I'm blacked out on like MLB Network anyway. It's Jazz is...
You gotta get so polarizing.
Yeah, I also need to get. I'll draft him in shallower formats. Let me just say that. Like, I think a lot of my rankings, a lot of my thought process is deeper formats. Where, like, if there's Fab, if there's waiver wire, Jazz will move up my ranks, because at that point, I'm willing to take the risk on Jazz in a shallower format where I can replace his production off the waiver wire. Does that make sense? So I think my rankings are a little skewed right now. That's why we talked about this, having rankings for 15 teamers and 12 teamers, because there are a handful of players.
It's so much based on team need and team context and roster
or league type. Because in a 12 teamer, I'm taking a chance on Jazz over India, Polanco, and Altuve. But in a 15, give me those other three ahead of them because I know what I feel safer in what I'm getting in those other three. So that's why he's like Jazz, Danny Jansen, weird names to put in the same conversation. But those are two guys that come to mind instantly that are like guys that shoot up or down my board. Or sorry, no, Kirk, Christian Kirk, not Danny Jansen. Christian Kirk,
Jazz Chisholm.
What is it, Christian? Oh, got wrong sport. Well, I had Kirk Cousins in my head first, and I pivoted from Kirk Cousins to Christian Kirk.
To Christian Kirk to finally the one you met, Alejandro Kirk. Dude, that's amazing.
Yes, I don't understand. All right, so Alejandro Kirk.
Wait, rewind. How'd you get from Jazz Chisholm to Kirk Cousins?
was it 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or 7 degrees, whatever that thing is? 7 degrees of Christian or whatever, Kirk Cousins, whatever it is, that, you know, I'm talking about the game. People, someone's yelling at us in their headphones because we don't know the damn game, but everyone knows what I'm talking about. So Jazz, and I almost called him Kirk Cousins again, Alejandro Kirk. You know what? Kirk Cousins is a catcher for the Blue Jays. I don't care what anyone says. You can't tell me otherwise. So Captain Kirk and Jazz Chisholm, those are guys that I'm taking chances on in shallower leagues where replacement value is better off the waiver wire, where they can be easily, like, the production can be easily replaced if they don't produce as expected or anticipated. So that's why I always put the caveat that my ranks are kind of skewed towards 15s, but there's a few names that, wait, league type matters, like shallower formats or fab matters. Like, I might take Jazz Chisholm and TGFBI because I can play the waiver wire. I trusted my knowledge in fab to make it happen. So anyway, gosh. Captain Kirk, Christian Kirk, Kirk Cousins, Alejandro Kirk. And this is second base preview, not catcher. So even better. Tommy
Edman. Last guy.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the last guy we both have in this tier is Ketel Marte. And I think we both kind of have the same grouping here in this tier. And this is where I want to have my second baseman by, typically, because I feel like there's a big fall off following Ketel Marte here as we get into, like, you know, after pick 100.
Yeah. And Ketel Marte is the 11th. He is the 11th. I just said catcher. He is the 11th second baseman per ADP as well. So we have him ranked along with ADP. How did we do that? Oh, because we both have India over him. Okay. Because India is the guy going after him in ADP that we put above. Okay. Because we put him above Tommy Edman, who's going way earlier. He's going eighth. Well, not way earlier in terms of ADP, but just way, he's going earlier in terms of rankings, I guess. So, yeah. It's kind of, he's actually in the grouping.
Yeah. Yeah. Tommy Edman, as far as drafts go, Edman's in that grouping. I think we talked about Edman like a few episodes ago about guys that were fading or like in the top 100. And yeah, we discussed, like, you know, the plate discipline, only a 5.5% walk rate. You know, he doesn't hit the ball very hard. I'm just not sure he keeps that leadoff spot, you know, just to kind of reiterate our concerns here. He's just not the kind of profile that I want to be going after at the range that he's going right now. You know, I'm not sure that there's very much, if any, more power upside here. I know we kind of discussed the possibility of someone like, you know, Dylan Carlson or Harrison Bader maybe being better fits for the leadoff spot, at least especially versus right-handed pitching, because that's kind of where Edman gets most of his power from. Versus lefties. I don't know. Do you have anything else to add?
I want to say I've heard it, but I can't say I've read it, so I don't want to say it's happening for sure. Edman might be giving up switch hitting. I think that's been a rumor I've heard floated out there. I got to see it first, or maybe find an actual... I don't want to put out this false information. Oh, he's definitely doing it. I just feel like I've heard that. I'm not making that up. I don't know where I've heard it. Could have been something on TikTok for all I know. I really have no idea. So I don't want to say it's for sure, but it's something to watch for. Maybe he does, like, maybe pulls a Cedric Mullins. Sticks to one side of the
play. He had a 665 OPS versus righties for an 84 WRC plus and a 794 OPS versus lefties. So, I mean, yeah, much better versus lefties. Yeah.
Pull up is 2019 when he first came up. I think it was when he had a good year. I think 2020 was kind of a letdown. Can you see if the splits were just as bad that first year as rookie year?
Yeah. So versus left, his rookie year, he had a 964 OPS versus lefties, and an 810 OPS versus righties.
And I remember seeing that. I remember seeing that he was better his rookie year all around. And I'm wondering what changed. It was, so did pitchers adapt, or did he change his approach and maybe it screwed him? So I'm wondering, can he revert back to that, whatever he did his rookie year, to be the guy that had us excited entering 2020 and 2021 and kind of come up short? I'm not changing my ranking of him, but I have come around on the idea of maybe he can adapt and Edmund can turn into what he was, which isn't flashy, but at least would be good enough to sustain the stolen bases and the on base, get back to on base guy and be a better batting average guy. And just, I mean, still somebody, it's still, I think there's a lot of ifs, ands and buts, candies and nuts deals. You know what I mean? Or ifs and buts or candies and nuts, whatever that saying is. I don't know. I'm full of weird stuff.
You got tonight. That one right. Yeah. No, I was just going to say 2019. I mean, it was over 349 plate appearances. So,
It was a small sample. I remember that much.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, because he also showed, Edmund also showed that he was this type of like a solid plate discipline contact guy in the minors too. It was one of those guys that came up and it was, you knew the hit tool was there, but that was about, like, you weren't sure what was going to carry. The speed was there. And so I don't want to count him out completely, but we are obviously how we rank him. It's unlikely we're going to draft him. So it's not that I can't say he's not a guy I'm crossing off my boards, but there's no chance I'm getting him because of where he's taken compared to where I rank him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I'm trying to be optimistic because I saw there was like a glimmer of hope for a reason, at least at one point. So it's hard, like one bad season or one bad, like, I don't know. I feel like there could be something there, or maybe he was figured out. This tier though, so you mentioned we dropped Edmund from tier three to tier four. We both did, and it kind of starts our own tier, and our tiers are the same here, and it's kind of this all the same guys. Jake Cronenworth, DJ LeMahieu. I have Ty France a little lower than you, but same idea. But you have, okay, so you have Chris Taylor in this tier. I don't. I have Luis Urias and you don't. Did Chris Taylor, I guess, do, I keep doing tonight, that's weird. Did Chris Taylor do something, I guess, enough to prove to you that he's worth going there? I have him a little lower, but I guess I kind of get it, because I know I found myself intrigued looking into him this year.
Yeah, I think he probably belongs in that next tier, actually, because I do think he's being a bit overvalued at this point. He's going like around pick 135, and I mean, going into his age 32 season, he'll be 32 in August, but he's maintained that super high BABIP now, like basically since 2017. But you gotta wonder, I mean, his profile is so dependent on that BABIP because of that high strikeout rate, 28.7% strikeout rate last year. Part of it is because, you know, he's such a good line drive hitter, but you just gotta wonder how much longer he can sustain that. I mean, he did hit 254 last year. I think I'm a little lower. And then especially, you know, as long as Mookie Betts and Trey Turner are healthy, Taylor's probably hitting, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth in that lineup. So, I'm going to end up being a little bit lower on Taylor, and I probably won't have much of him where he's going right now.
He hit the second most home runs of his career last year with 20 home runs, Taylor did, and stole the second most bases of his career with 13. The part about the stolen bases that's encouraging is that he was 13 of 14. So efficiency was there. So maybe the stolen bases will return, which is what keeps me somewhat intrigued with him. But the high strikeout rates scare me, even though he sustains a high BABIP. Chris Taylor is a 261 career hitter. And if the stolen bases don't return, then he is a more expensive Enrique Hernandez.
Yeah, that's a good comp, because I was kind of making that same comp.
I mean, they played on the same team at one point too, so there's that.
Yeah, yeah. Except, I mean, I think Hernandez, you know, he's going to lead off there, at least starting the year. So.
Yeah, well, everyone was like, no one believed me. Like, that was, again, going back to the lineup chart, that was one of those things. Like, there was a couple, like Victor Robles was a bust from the lineup chart. He was like, you know, oh, he's leading off. They seem to really have faith in him. And then like last week, they're like, haha, JK, watch this. And they start putting him ninth for no reason. And then quotes changed. But Enrique Hernandez, Cora loves him. Cora went to bat for him, said he'd be a leadoff guy. He flourishes in that position, blah, blah, blah. He earned it. He stuck with it. Mullins was another one that I think was getting kind of obvious, but it seems like his ADP never went up, even though he was clearly going to be the leadoff guy with a power speed profile. So I'm hoping to find this year's Enrique Hernandez type of thing. Like, people just don't believe it. And you just made the comment, like, well, he'll lead off for a little bit. I think he has a longer leash than many of us realize, because Cora really does believe in him and will let him work through it. But the guy, I'm surprised you have lower in the next tier. Like, it's like, I'm just higher on Luis Urias, but I want to move Luis Urias even higher. I just know I can't consciously do so. But
yeah, man, I love Luis Urias. I know we're both big fans of Urias.
I just got him in back-to-back drafts. We went into the last draft in the Battle of the Pods getting him together.
Yeah.
There was a lot of changes to his profile. I got to find it. There was so much. He changed his...
The book on him was, you know, too many ground balls. I mean, he would obliterate the minor leagues and then come up and just, you know, hit too many ground balls. It couldn't be sustained in the majors. But, I mean, last year... Drop that ground ball rate down to 41%. You know, strikeout rate dipped too to 20%. He's always kind of had good discipline. You know, 11% walk rate last year. I love it. I mean, short, second, third, and short eligibility too. I mean, he's eligible everywhere.
He's Jake Cronenworth, but plays for the Brewers. That's why it's like I put them in the same conversation. I think we had this little discussion. I think Urias has a little more power potential because of the home ballpark, and then he gets to play, you know, at Great American Small Park and other favorable venues like that. And then, but the batting average might be a little more of an issue, because I think Cronenworth's batting average upside is a little more. So I think there's give and take.
Yeah, Cronenworth there. Makes more contact. But
they are a very similar player to one another. And then the eligibility kind of keeps... That's why Cronenworth does stay ahead of him a little bit. But Urias also made like a batting stance change, which I think helped him probably helped in some adjustments, because stuff like that, it's hard to quantify exactly how it helps. But Urias did also, to add on what you said, a career high launch angle, 14.1 degrees, which helped lead to that career high fly ball rate. And he paired that with a pull rate, a career high 46.6% pull rate. So Urias is another guy who took that hit tool he has and turned it into he sold out a little bit for power, but he's able to take advantage of how good he's able to hit it at making contact with the ball. He also set career high marks in hard hit rate, barrel rate, and max exit velo and average exit velo, which is stuff which all makes sense, because if you're hitting the ball like never before in the air, like never before, all the other stuff's going to be like never before. So there's a lot there. And the thing is I'm buying it, because obviously they've been doing great things with their hitters there in Milwaukee. Urias, Adames, Roddy Tellez had a little bit of a bounce back last year. People might not realize they have something going. The Tyrone Taylor is a no-name, like later career breakout. He's like 27, 28. He kind of came out of nowhere for them, and he shows to have promise. Colton Wong had one of his better years last year, which we're about to talk about here shortly. So I buy into this team with how they're getting their hitters to produce as well.
Yeah, the only thing I would say about Urias is
stop it. You're not allowed to speak negatively or ill, my guy. No,
I just want to know that he's gonna be in the lineup every day, that his spot is safe.
How dare you question that?
I mean, it should be, right? I mean, he's a good defender.
I just don't see anybody else who would take it, honestly. I'll put it right now.
My only, like, can Mike Brousseau take some at-bats against lefties away from him? Like,
wouldn't that be more likely to be a platoon with Rowdy at first?
I mean, yeah, that's a good point.
And I think they actually have him. That's funny. I just pulled up the roster resource. I think they actually have him plugged in as a platoon at first base with Rowdy.
Yeah. All right. So Urias is good
to go. You take away my... Don't you do that to me? Yeah. Don't you do it? I bought a Brewers hat. I'm thinking about buying a Brewers CBK jersey, or Scherzi at least. I think that's my team this year.
Brewers are your team this year?
I think so. Like, besides the Marlins, like every year I try to adopt a team. It was the Mariners in 2020. Last year, I'm trying to remember. I usually, what I do is I find a team with a bunch of players I like on them for fantasy, and I'm like, that's my team. And Urias, I like Adames, and the next guy I want to talk about is Colton Wong. Where is he going? He is the 21st second baseman off the board. The 21st second baseman, I have him high. I'm the high guy on him at 17, and you have him 21st. You're wrong.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you why. But go ahead.
I'm gonna let you go ahead and spew your love for Colton Wong. But I'm just gonna say, like, I wasn't really a believer until you made me look into him a bit more. But go ahead.
I feel like that's the problem. Everyone thinks they know Colton Wong, except for he just had a heck of a season. He only played 116 games because of health issues, which health isn't usually I guess he's not always the healthiest, but he did just come off back-to-back seasons being relatively healthy most of the year. He had 14 home runs, 12 stolen bases, while still sustaining that like elite strikeout rate, only 16.9% strikeout rate for Colton Wong, hitting 272. OBP is good enough. It was only 335, but he is, you know, that's kind of last 2 years before that was 350, 361. So there's room for some improvement there. But regardless, the hit tool will get on base enough. He's leading off at the very least to lead off against righties, but they don't seem to have anybody platooning him there. So regardless, even if he is a strong side platoon against righties, he should play every day because the defense will keep him there. Mm-hmm. And again, we're talking double-digit stolen bases, double-digit home runs in just 116 games. Leading off in that ballpark, he has good contact skills. He actually upped his barrel rate. It wasn't great, but upped it to 5.5%. Career high hard hit rate last year. He seems to just kind of make it happen. Like, he's not flashy, he's not sexy, but Colton Wong has skills that are just intriguing. And he actually increased another guy who increased his fly ball and pull ball rate. Maybe it's another thing that they're doing in Milwaukee. So we're seeing these changes. I don't know. I'm in.
I think that we really underestimate the shift in ballparks from St. Louis to Milwaukee. I mean, when Milwaukee signed Colton Wong, I mean, I loved it. I thought, oh man, the upside here just in the ballpark change is going to be incredible. And I think the fact that at the end of the year, he kind of just ended up with the exact numbers that we kind of would have expected from a Colton Wong season, 14 homers, 12 stolen bases, 272 batting average. But I mean, 492 plate appearances.
Yeah, no, so that's the thing.
I think
he usually compiles.
I think it's a little overlooked. And I definitely think that park change is being underestimated a bit because, I mean, hitters can overachieve in that ballpark there in Milwaukee. So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to have to move Colton Wong up a bit. And I think, I mean, just extrapolate what he did last year, 14 homers, 12 steals, and only 492 plate appearances. I mean, as long as he stays healthy.
I think 15-15 is fair.
I think so. I mean,
assuming they let him run again. He wasn't the most efficient, but that didn't stop them from letting him run. So he ran. And
12 for 17 is just fine, too.
Yeah, he just wasn't like I'm a stickler. I want like super efficient. Like Chris Taylor's 13 for 14. I want that. But no, I get it. Yeah, he's fine. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. But the 14 home runs and the change in approach in terms of pulling the ball more and hitting more balls in the air, like driving all that, putting all that together, 15-15 is realistic. Even 15-10, you're getting, well, now his ADP has actually gone up. You're getting it closer to pick 200, but you're still getting a guy with double digit stolen bases with the potential. I doubt he gets there. But the potential for 20 home runs, that's why I say 15. I think 15 is fair because 15 would still be a career high. But we saw him put up 14 in, like you said, the 116 games, 492 play appearances. Colton Wong has a chance to have a career year in his age 31 season, given the ballpark and the overall changes while sustaining an elite Z contact. We're talking a 90% Z contact rate. It's amazing. The dude can do this. Like, I think he could put it together and have himself that 1 year that's like, wow, he put up 15-15 one year, like Elvis Andrews type of thing. You know, when Elvis Andrews kind of had that year where he's like, he was always a 10-10 guy, and he had like the 30-30 or 20-20 year, whatever it was crazy. I don't think Wong has that type of breakout potential, but I think it's going to be one of those like, oh, no one saw this coming, when really the writing was on the wall. Wong, everyone should have saw Wong coming. Yeah, I said it. Anyway, Colton Wong, yeah, he's just my guy. He's a my guy. I don't have nearly enough. I think I only have him on two teams, maybe, which is stupid because he's a guy every draft I go in wanting. This draft, he got jumped. I was going to take him, and he got jumped in ADP. It actually pissed me off because I was like, I was going to take him. Again, when I say when someone gets jumped in ADP in drafts, I don't know about you, but I'm referring to the fact that someone jumped me when I'm willing to take them ahead of ADP as it is, too. So my ADP is getting jumped, which aggravates me because I'm taking a guy 20, 30 picks ahead of ADP to try to secure. That's a draft. That's a whole round and a half, usually. Sometimes two rounds, depending on the draft, the format. And if I'm getting jumped in ADP, it's frustrating because it's like, what the heck? Like, I was willing to do that. Like heck, Fish got mad at me. I drafted Iglesias. I set the new min pick in NFBC on him. Fish was going to he got mad at me because he was about to set the new min pick on him. The same exact draft. And that's the type of drafts that you have. That's the type of stuff, type of leagues we're playing in. So, yeah, I just wanted to rant about Colton Wong and how I need to, and how I I try to find ways to move him up, but I can't consciously take him over Ty France or Luis Urias. Although the argument can be made for either, because I guess I can almost move Wong up a tier. Honestly, I just don't want to be too. I don't want to be too bullish, but I'm pretty bullish.
Yeah. Is there anyone else here? I mean, Gene Segura. I mean, if you basically eliminate, 2020, the short season. I mean, his last. I mean, he's just been consistent as heck. I mean, 290. It last year, 2019, 280, the year before, 304, 300. I mean, he's basically just been super consistent, locked for, double digit homers. And yeah, I mean, stole 9 bases, just kind of solid all around, right?
Yeah, just kind of boring. It's just he had this weird profile where he kind of sold up for power last year in the second half, so it kind of sank Segura's batting average a little bit, but overall. He's just kind of like a guy I tend to fall back on. Just like, okay, hang out. You're going to go there. Jonathan Scope, same thing. We talked about, I don't know if we're talking about first base at all, but a guy that's kind of like, you know what you're getting, and he's safe, solid, dependable. He's going to have a better lineup around him. Max Muncy, he's low for both of us because we don't know if or when he's playing.
Yeah.
Do you have Toro? You're low on Toro. Not really that much lower on Toro. Let's look at the ADP. We can talk about a couple last guys here. Call it a night. Come up on an hour. Do you have Gavin Lux a little higher than I do? I have him. I wasn't sure if he got snubbed. Do you believe he'll just put it all together finally? Because those splits scare me. Playing time potential concerns scare me. Like, I had a hard time. I fit him in my top 30 because it gets ugly at the very end. But I'm not. You have him ahead of guys like Scope and Toro and even Jimenez, who I trust for playing time and production more at this point. I don't know. I maybe I've given up too early on what who was a former top prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still there for Lux. I'm just, I'm not sure. I mean, the strikeout rate's not egregious. I do see the splits. But no, I mean, I think the potential's still there. But no, I could, this whole range here is just, it's tough. This is why I like to get those early second basemen. But yeah, Lux, Scope, I have Muncy here. Andres Jimenez, I should probably move up a little bit because, I mean, looking at that Guardians team, I don't see a reason why he shouldn't be playing, right? And, I think if he plays a full season, he's got that, 30 stolen base potential.
Yeah, but it's just, I guess.
It's not really someone I'd love to take a chance on, but I have a share or two of Jimenez just because I feel like he should get the first crack at the
second base job. I don't know why I was thinking Gavin Lux there. Jimenez, I think, has that upside. For some reason, I had Lux in my head. I like Jimenez. I think people don't realize he finished playing, full time, and he didn't post the best in terms of like WRC plus was still under low average, but Jimenez posted, I think 7 for 7 for stolen bases in the second half, a total of like 11 for 11 or 13 for 13. He was 100% successful on the base last year, which is big because I think that means, they're going to give him the green light. So I think he gets those stolen bases back. I do think that there is some depth coming up from the minors that could be concerned if Jimenez doesn't get it going. But they went out and traded for him, and he was supposed to be like the bigger piece or the biggest piece in that trade. And he should get a leash to show that he has something or not, So I don't know much, but I don't know if we should. What can we expect? I'm trying to think. Like, that's why I have him ahead of Lux, though, because I think at the very least, he's going to produce and get the playing time. I know the ceiling's not there, but I feel like there's a higher floor. I don't know. I like Jimenez though. Like, I'm good with. I like taking him as like a bench bat or like a MI option with speed upside. But that's about it. Like, you have David Fletcher. I have Garrett Hampson. And honestly, I threw Garrett Hampson on there because even if he doesn't play every day, speed, strictly because of speed. I think he stole like 17 bases last year and wasn't even a full time player.
I put David Fletcher there as my last one rounding out the rankings. And I mean, I like Fletcher. He's going at pick 337. He's kind of one of the last guys that you can kind of bank for 600 plate appearances. And I don't see I don't really see a whole lot different between David Fletcher and Nicky Lopez, who was going 150 picks. I mean, I think Lopez has definitely been slipping like over the last month, but I didn't really see a whole lot different between like Fletcher and Nicky Lopez. I think Fletcher's probably actually even safer as far as like the playing time. I think last year you see like Fletcher really like kind of struggled down the stretch there at the end. But I think, a handful of homers.
He is.
I mean, he's gonna steal. If he keeps running, I mean, he attempted 18 steals, 15 for 18 last year. I don't see. I think he rebounds in the batting average a bit, and maybe he can get back up to the 15 steals. So, I mean, I like him there just for playing time. Second and short eligible if he just basically injury replacement, and you're hoping for, you know, batting average and steals.
My favorite guy that doesn't crack my top 30 but is really close is Tony Kemp. I think Tony Kemp is being really slept on, still going. He is creeping up draft boards, but he's at 381 right now. So in shallower formats, he's nobody. But he stole, like, I think he had 9-9 home runs and stolen bases, hit like 270 last year, so off the top of my head, 265 maybe.
279.
I knew it was really good. And he has elite. I use the word elite a lot, but I usually hold on to elite for like sub 17% strikeout rates. And the dude walked more than he struck out over like like 400 something play appearances or something crazy. So the dude has like truly elite plate discipline. And we're talking about also a really good contact skill. Again, another guy with a Z contact, which is contact in the zone over 90% while not chasing. So he's selective and makes contact on when he swings on pitches that he swings on. So you have Tony Kemp there. And the appeal there is the fact that their speed, a little bit of power, like he's not a zero there. And he should be leading off for the Athletics. Mm-hmm. So playing time is there. So you have playing time, a little bit of late speed, power, and batting. Like, you're getting all the categories that are hard to fill throughout the draft late. Like, you don't find a lot of guys that offer a little bit of power and speed combos late like this. And he offers it along with multi-positional eligibility. So he got jumped up in this draft too. Another guy that I jump, like, he has 380 ADP. I'll take him around like 310. Usually I really will. And he didn't make it to me at like 303. So it was like, it was frustrating because that's what I get for I put my information out there. I'm an open book, and I know that it hurts me more than it helps me, but it is what it is. I do it for you. I do it for you guys, all for you guys. No, but I think that's going to do it. You have anything you want to add, buddy?
No, I think that's just about going to wrap it up. I was hoping to get on the clock here to make a live pick here, but I'm in this 4-hour DC, and there's always that one guy that tends, the one person that has got a timeout in the first round. And I'm about to set the min pick on Josh Hader.
Nice. and listen, one last caveat, if you didn't shut us off when we said, are you done? Min pick on closer might be our brand this year on the Bases Loaded pod, but it's also you're seeing these early draft boards. If you're reintroduced, if you're catching up on podcasts as you get into baseball mode because football's ending, just know early closer is because of the formats we're playing in. In your home league, in 12 teamers, you don't need to take early closers. There's going to be plenty to go around. Do not overreact in shallower formats. These leagues we're playing in, there are no waiver wires. There are no trades. Your team is what it is. You draft 50 rounds of players, and that is that. So saves get pushed up. So when you hear us make crazy moves like this, just know it's the format making these crazy moves for us. not us wanting to do this. We're doing it because of team build, team construction, and all that. So I just want to make that very clear, and we will emphasize that as we continue on, because people see when I post my draft board to Twitter, people are like, I can't get behind Iglesias in the second round. You think that was easy for me to do? There's a reason why no one else has done it before me. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why I set the new min pick on them. It wasn't easy, but it just worked out for this specific team, because then Witt fell to the third. So I was like, sweet. It's almost like flip-flopping picks. Like, if I took Iglesias in the third, people wouldn't be saying anything. All I did was, and if I took Witt in the second, you know? So when stuff like that happens, other players get pushed down. And it's part of the strategy too. I knew there was like five players I wanted that gave me the same skill set. So I took my closer knowing I wanted that one, and then took the best of the remaining players that fell to me. And Witt was the guy. So yeah, that's it. A little draft strategy to finish the pod. For those listening still, thank you guys so much, guys and gals. We appreciate you so much. Please, a 5-star rating review on your way out is greatly appreciated. And don't forget to check out skplaybook.com. New articles are out. Ryan Venasio just wrote us a new article for us too. I just dropped one today. George dropped one like a week ago. We got articles coming out. We have the charts. We have the Discord. Check that out. $2.99 a month. Appreciate it. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at @Mike_Curlin for myself. George is @Roto_Nino. And we'll be back. Maybe even it's early in the week. Maybe we'll squeeze in a second pod this week. Who knows? But at the very least, we'll get one out next week for sure. And we'll talk to you soon.